Good afternoon. It's 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beeter. Glad to be with you on this, relatively sloppy Monday. But thanks so much for tuning in this afternoon. Today, we'll be talking about youth sports and the youth sports initiative in Fort Wayne. A bit later on, we'll be talking with Matthew Bunsen about the new Pope, Pope Francis, elected last week. But first, we'll get to, youth sports. And with me to help with that line of questioning today, it's one of the usual suspects himself, Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
And we want to hear from our listeners this hour. Of course, if you have a question or comment, the number 260-452-1185 or toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters.
Okay. I think a good way to get started would be for you folks to give us a little bit of a overview of why this appealed to the Legacy Group as a likely area for Fort Wayne to grow in.
Well, I'm Al Mall, the park director, and I can make a few comments on that. Well, first of all, we've always felt, and I think Charisse would agree, that a cornerstone to Parks and Rec and our programming is youth sports involvement with youth. Anytime we can expand or take a look at an opportunity for our youth, we feel that's priceless. And I think the Legacy Committee and the Legacy Process knew that this was a key element to the fabric of our community, and it helps frame who we are. It might even give us an identity at times of what we're about here in Fort Wayne, and just really focusing on our youth and giving them an opportunity to develop. I don't, Charisse, you might want to expand on that.
Sure. When the Legacy Task Force got together back in 2011, I think everybody expected economic development, rivers, those types of topics to come up quite a bit from the general public. And as you have all probably heard, we receive and above 900 community comments in several different ways. I think we did many on youth sports, but I think that was one of the surprises from the Legacy Committee, was that youth sports ranked so highly and got so much attention from our committee as something that could really bring Fort Wayne above where we are now.
So what do we, when the study is done, what are we going to know about youth sports and its potential for Fort Wayne that we don't know now?
Well, first of all, I guess two components there. One, we'll want to take a look at what we do well. And I think it's important to point out this really isn't a parks and recreation project. This is a project that encompasses a total community. And hopefully it would be an opportunity to maybe expand or develop things that we already do well. And there are a variety of different components in this community. Now, just to name a few, the basketball component, the variety of programs in youth sports, volleyball, soccer, and a variety of other things. At the same time, take a look at opportunities maybe that we can expand this community that are a little less known, like the Turnstone operation. Make sure we are inclusive and take a look at adaptive sports or activities for special needs. Now, are there opportunities out there, the second component, that we haven't utilized in this community? Are there other markets and future trends that maybe there's an opportunity that our youth are interested in, not just our youth, but other youth are interested in other markets that are comparable to ours that either we can partner with or develop here and become a regional attraction? We don't know what those are at this point, and that's why we're doing the study.
I guess something I'm looking forward to, or I'm hoping will emerge from this, is almost a business census of how big is the private sector involvement in this. And if you could, everything from, the part-time coach who has 40 kids in a baseball camp every week to, something like Gym Rats and the Spies facility. Is that likely to be incorporated in this?
Well, I think, and Charisse, I think that's a very good point. Doing an inventory of our current assets is very key, and our assets could be physical, you know, assets, also human assets. And what do we do well? What can we stand? What are we actually employing in this community beyond what are just the traditional, I would say, avenues? Sharice?
No, I would agree. I think that looking at our strengths that we have now, looking at the areas and that we can grow in, I think is also where can we tap markets that aren't currently being tapped right now from a regional perspective. I think we've been told that Fort Wayne is well positioned between Detroit and Chicago and Ohio cities to kind of be the middle of the road for a lot of the larger cities. And I think there's a lot of areas that we could tap into in that regard.
Yeah, we feel there's, you know, and I think that's one reason the mayor really has pushed this is there is an economic development position on this now. Anytime you're, I think, expanding the character of your youth, if you're doing skill development for your youth, that is an economic driver. And that's a driver that's common, that's successful in any industry, and hopefully that will drive private investment because there are opportunities through this process. Like I pointed out earlier, this really isn't a parks and recreation project. We're just helping drive it along with community development. But the hope would be that we would have private investment, and there are dollars to be leveraged through the legacy process that can be invested or complemented.
We're talking today with Al Mall, Director of Fort Wayne Parks and Recreation, and Sharice Fortreed, Senior Planner with the City of Fort Wayne. I think I got that right this time. And we want to hear from you during this part of our program. If you have any questions about youth sports or the youth sports initiative in Fort Wayne, give us a call, 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And Sharice, I want to turn to you. We've kind of outlined this process so far, but let's bring it home here because this legacy money, this consultant who's going to help Fort Wayne take a look at our resources here, this is really twofold. You're looking for to expand the opportunities for both local youth, and also there's it seems to me a huge opportunity here to expand the local economy.
Absolutely. I think youth sports tourism is a definite economic development driver for communities. Hotel stays, restaurants, other tourist attractions like our zoo all benefit when these events come to town.
And this is something that's not really new to us here in Fort Wayne. I mean, we're hearing continually from Visit Fort Wayne and other folks with the city that these things are already happening here.
Absolutely. And they can happen more.
certainly, I think folks would hope, Al Mall.
Well, I think a lot of us lose sight of it because it's so enjoyable to do, but this is one of the strongest and the biggest growing industries in this country and has been for some time, and it continues to grow, not just on the commercial side, but just on the value side. And so
on the value side, how?
I would say core values of an individual. I mean, outlet for youth, activities for youth, character development, youth development, like we mentioned before. And at the same time, that hopefully translates in some economic benefits for the community. But all communities are going after this business. We're trying to identify the one or two that we feel might have the biggest opportunity, as Sharice said, for this region.
We do need to take just a quick break here, and we hope in the meantime you'll get in touch with us again during this part of the program. We're talking about youth sports in Fort Wayne. Get in touch, 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, parenting a baby doomed to die soon. We talk with Emily Rapp. Her new memoir is about her son, who at the age of 9 months was diagnosed with Tay-Sachs disease, a genetic disorder which leads to dementia, seizures, spasticity, blindness, paralysis, and eventually death. He died last month before reaching his third birthday. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 here on WBOI. American Roots follows the journeys of folklorist Alan Lomax as he recorded the music of America and the world. We'll look into Lomax's work as a sound recordist, cultural activist, radio host, and above all, shaper of pop culture. Plus music by Muddy Waters, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, and the Rolling Stones. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, offering opportunities to volunteer and make an impact on a child's life by mentoring or tutoring. UWEducationNetwork.org. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Minutes past the hour. It's Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And during this part of our program, we're talking with Charisse Fortreed, senior planner at the City of Fort Wayne, and Al Moll, director of the Fort Wayne Parks and Recreation. We're talking during this part of the program about youth sports in Fort Wayne, looking to possibly expand the city's efforts through an upcoming consultant taking a look at our resources within the city. We want you to get in touch with us during the next 10 minutes here. If you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 or toll free 800-471-9264. Of course, our Facebook page is up, as is our Twitter feed, and you can email us middaymatters@nipr.fm. Bob Kaler.
Going into this, do you have a clear read on the city's perspective on the relationship of public investment and expanding private investment in youth sports? Like, how far, do you have an idea about how far the city is willing to go to make that happen?
I think right now what the city was looking at is if, and hopefully out of this process, something would surface, you know, and when I say something, some specific area of an opportunity where the city could complement that private investment through an investment of public funds through the legacy process. And there's dollars that have been set aside because during the initial champion team process, nothing sparked up that was, I would say, a big red flag of opportunity. And that's why the next step was just go out and take a look what might be available. But there are dollars that have been dedicated that would have to be leveraged on a match basis. And I know, Charisse, correct me if I'm wrong, 2-to-1 would probably be a 2-to-1 okay, private to public. And that dollar amount that's been specified at this point is anywhere between, on the public side, could be $5 or $6 million. Okay. So you're talking something that could be a combination of projects up to $15 to $20 million.
Wow.
And that could be facility improvement, that could be a new facility, whatever, something that hasn't been, we don't know at this point. But I think, I don't know if that somewhat answers the question.
Yeah, that's...
It looks like we have a caller on the line here, and we do want you to get in touch with us. The number 260-452-1185, toll free 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones here and go to Bill. Bill, you're on Midday Matters. Good afternoon. Bill, are you with us?
Hi, this is Bill, and my question, before the question, I'd like to say that Fort Wayne's been a welcoming spot for the Junior League Central United States Championship for the last 23 years. That's where 17 state champions are coming in and playing for the opportunity to play in the World Series for teen baseball, that is kids 13 and 14 years old, to play in Taylor, Michigan for the World Series. Likewise, last year, the big league kids that is the kids 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, finished second in the United States and third in the world. Little League Baseball controls 70% of all amateur baseball played in the world. And what I'm looking at, or the question is, what do you think the opportunities are for a more lighted diamond space in the city for youth baseball? This area has the second largest teen baseball program under the jurisdiction of Little League. So there is my question.
And Al Mull, looks like you were ready to jump in there.
Well, I guess that is a common question, and it's a solid question that we get from the community, the shortage of diamonds, and then specifically the shortage of lighted diamonds. I think definitely if that would surface through this process, I don't think there's a question that there's not a need. It's whether we could financially put it together to make the numbers work, even with the public investment. But that's your caller is right on. I mean, that's a common request, and that particular segment of the market is steady and grows.
Well, and with such a significant number of people and also money involved, potentially a big win for the city.
That's what we're looking for.
Bill, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185. Toll free, 800-471-9264. Another caller on the line here. Let's go to Daniel. Daniel, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, thank you. So Fort Wayne has portrayed itself in promotional materials as family-friendly, and how can we use youth sports to encourage young people to take up this vision for a family-friendly and career growth in our region? Because, after all, there are a good number of positions that go unfilled because required skill sets and possible employees are not always found in our workforce. So the summary question is, can youth sports lead to encouraging both local folks to stay in the region or even bring additional folks to our region who would like to build a life here?
And let's put that to the panel. Youth sports as a way to keep folks in Fort Wayne and develop new talents that will stay here. Any thoughts?
Well, and again, another great question. I don't know if I have an answer for that. I mean, we would always hope there'd be opportunities that we could grow an industry, regardless of what that industry is. But the one that can establish an identity, an outcome of that, you would think would be employment opportunities for people that had that specific skill set. But if we're talking about actually developing that type of skill set, I don't know if the city could take that on as a specific project.
Charisse Fortreat, was this something on the minds of the folks who decided to, investigate youth sports and the expansion of youth sports further in terms of, developing folks who want to stick around, developing, youth into, high-performing adults, basically, that can help the Fort Wayne economy later on?
Character development for our existing youth was definitely a main focus for the Legacy Task Force. I'm not sure that there was a lot of conversation about career growth, but I do think that if you have a great facility in an area of sports, you're going to attract maybe physical therapists, you're going to attract coaching, you're going to attract families who want to excel in a particular sport. So I think that if you have a great facility, I think those things come along with it.
Yeah, I think if you look at our success stories in this town, if you take a look at the Tin Cop operations or SPEES or Parks and Rec or other organizations that really started out of nothing, and you look at the employment base they now provide for this community, a successful operation, regardless of the industry, will expand its workforce. And so we would hope that would be the same case here with the youth sports movement.
Daniel, we appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or toll-free 800-471-9264. Just about 5 minutes before we have to wrap up this portion of Midday Matter. So if you have your question or comment ready, do get in touch with us right now. We often talk on this program, and Charisse, perhaps I'll put this to you first, about The integration of the very diverse immigrant community we have here in Fort Wayne among Latinos and Burmese and many, many others. Is there a specific or do you foresee specific outreach, as this youth sports expansion continues to those communities to bring them more into, to develop them into more Fort Wayne-centric folks?
The study that we're putting the RFP out for right now is in two parts. One is a community assessment looking at our existing facilities and our existing markets, and then the other is a market potential. Where could we go? I think that looking at our demographics right now, the kind of sports that our demographics would like to play, is definitely something that this consultant needs to look at in order to do a community assessment.
And Al Mall, I'm sure in your position, you've seen very directly the effect that youth sports can have on bringing folks together in Fort Wayne.
Well, I think the two demographics you indicated are two demographics that we have to find an outreach to bring the community together, both in the Bermudez community and the Latino or Hispanic community, and that's always a specific goal or mission each year of Parks and Recreation, the city as a whole. But anytime you can bring family together and with their youth, it's a success story for us.
Bob Kaler.
Do you have a sense of what it takes in general terms to move like travel teams, visits to Fort Wayne to being overnight stays?
Well, it varies depending on the actual when I can say Parks and Rec. I go back to when we ran the ice operation out of McMillan. Typically, you would have to have organized leagues, organized travel teams that it was fairly privately supported, either through their family or through organizations, that would drive the need to stay overnight. But you would have to at least have a 2 to 3 day tournament.
Okay. And I think that's about all the time we have today. Unfortunately, we've reached the bottom of the hour. But big thanks to Al Mall, director of Fort Wayne Parks and Recreation, and Charisse Fortreed, senior planner with the city of Fort Wayne. Thanks so much to both of you for being with us on Midday Matters today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up after the news break, we'll be talking with Matthew Bunsen about the new pope elected last week, Pope Francis, his effect on the church, and potentially his effect on the local diocese here. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Later today, we begin a series on guns in America with a portrait of one life cut short.
I'm very proud of my brother. He was determined to make something out of his life.
Charles Foster Jr. was a college student shot and killed on New Year's Day.
The doctor came in. He like, we did all we can do. He's gone.
That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOI News. The Federal Aviation Administration says two of four people aboard a private jet that crashed in a northern Indiana neighborhood have died. Authorities say the Beechcraft Premier One twin jet flying out of Oklahoma apparently was experiencing mechanical trouble when it crashed late Sunday afternoon in South Bend. It struck three homes, becoming lodged in one of them. Federal Aviation Administration spokesman Roland Herwig in Oklahoma City says two people on the plane were killed, two others aboard were injured, as was one person on the ground, officials said. Officials say none of the survivors had life-threatening injuries. A South Bend fire official says they believe everyone connected with the damaged homes has been accounted for. An investigator with the National Transportation Safety Board arrived on the scene late Sunday. State lawmakers say legislation moving through the General Assembly will strengthen Indiana's consumer protection efforts of senior citizens. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, legislators and the General Assembly say they found a gap in the law they hope the bill will address.
Last year, the number of consumer complaints of financial exploitation received by Attorney General Greg Zeller's office increased by more than 9% among Hoosiers age 55 and older. And with the average age of Hoosiers on the rise, Zeller says he's expecting that number to continue to increase. Anderson Democratic Senator Tim Lannon says he and Zeller have crafted legislation to address a shortfall in the state's senior consumer protection efforts.
The senior may have, on the surface, voluntarily given up control of the property, for example, but it might be under false pretense, it might be because of the intimidation factor, but it's hard to get, say, the local prosecutor to come in and assist because they don't feel it rises to the level of a crime.
Lannon's bill provides greater avenues in civil court for seniors to recover money and property, including increased participation by the Attorney General. Zeller says these cases often occur between family members or caregivers, and his office can help mediate those disputes before they get to court.
But we need to have some remedy to go to court and have a judge make a judicial determination, and that's what's really missing that this statute would address.
The legislation already passed the Senate and is now up for a vote in the House Judiciary Committee as early as this week. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Indiana legislators are poised to approve shortening the time that school districts must hold onto vacant buildings in case a charter school operator wanted to move into the building. The state Senate could vote this week on the bill, cutting the current 4-year waiting period to 2 years and allowing a fast-track 30-day period for selling a closed school. The Senate's Education Committee voted 11-0 in favor of the changes that the House approved unanimously in January. The bill sponsor says the legislation comes after some Fort Wayne area districts faced troubles in selling 2 vacant schools, even though no charter schools want them. The 2011 law was aimed at what legislators said were instances in which public school districts refused to sell buildings to charter schools to avoid competition. You're listening to 89.1 FM, WBOY Fort Wayne. Now back to Midday Matters.
Good afternoon, 12:34. It's Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. We're so glad you've joined us this hour. Thanks again to Al Moll and Charisse Fortreat for being with us for the first part of our program. We're going to pivot just a little bit to some, on our weekly schedule here anyway, it's breaking news. The Catholic Church got a new pope last weekend to help us break that that process down and talk a little bit about the new pope's first days. Matthew Bunsen, a senior correspondent and our Sunday visitor. Matthew, thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
And I know you have many other titles here, too. Share with us.
A few.
You'll have only 30 seconds.
Right. Then, so. I'm a member of the senior fellow of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology in Ohio. I'm also on the faculty for the Catholic Distance University, where I teach church history. I'm the general editor of our Sunday Visitor's Catholic Almanac, and also the editor of the Catholic Answer magazine, and I write books.
Is that all?
That's all, yes.
Well, we really appreciate you being with us. I know many of our listeners probably heard you on NPR last week as well.
It was a good interview, too.
We want to talk just a bit more about, because the church, as this is the city of churches, has a big presence in Fort Wayne and beyond here. Talk about the new pope and what we might see locally in the coming years if there are changes. I want to start, though, by inviting our listeners to be with us, 260-452-1185, toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We want you to share your hopes for what the new pope may bring to the church. Matthew, I have to ask you, were you surprised at all? This came very quickly, and this election came very quickly in the process, I think took a lot of folks by surprise. Did you expect it to go this quickly, and did you expect Pope Francis to be from where he is from?
Well, let's put it this way. It was, I think, 2 days and 5 ballots, which is reasonably close to what we've had in the modern era for papal elections. I was of the view personally, and I talked about this on radio shows, that I thought the odds were really good that we would have someone from Latin America, certainly someone from beyond the boundaries of Europe. Latin America was a logical place because 42% of the world's Catholics are there. The center of gravity in a lot of ways in global Catholicism has shifted to the Southern Hemisphere. So there are a lot of indicators that the church was on the move, and the church definitely needed leadership from that part of the world that had matured in such a way that they could actually produce a pope. Now, the one that we actually got, the one who walked out on the loggia of St. Peter's Basilica, I think took everyone by surprise.
And why do you say that?
Well, Cardinal Bergoglio, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, for a long time the Cardinal Archbishop of Buenos Aires, was actually a runner-up to Pope Benedict in the 2005 conclave. At least that's the assumption of everything we've been hearing since then. And he was a solid candidate. I mean, certainly one of the most respected figures in the whole of the Latin American world. But he was 76 years old coming into this conclave. And the conventional wisdom, being what it is, assumed that the cardinals are going to be looking for somebody much younger. Mm-hmm. And so he did not really appear until right at the very end. There were a few whispers in the Italian newspapers and elsewhere of his name sort of percolating among the cardinals. Hmm. But no one took it any very seriously.
And this is, as you mentioned, I mean, it does seem like a somewhat monumental shift for the church, a Southern Hemisphere church now, in that so much of the growth in the Catholic Church coming from Africa and from Latin and South America.
Yeah, exactly. But 700 and some million Catholics now are outside of Europe. They're in the third world, what we call the third world, the developing world. He is the Pope of many firsts. He's, of course, the first Jesuit. He's the first non-European since 731. He is the first Pope of Argentina, first Pope of South America, first Pope of the Southern Hemisphere, first Pope of the Western Hemisphere. So the reason I make that list is you begin to appreciate the seismic quality of this election. Latin American church has truly come into her own. You know, in church terms, she's still relatively young, at half a millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
half a millennium. Yeah,
right.
You know.
and in a way that's the point I'm trying to make, that she has matured now, not just to assume such a significant place in the Catholic Church around the world, but to produce the supreme head of the Catholic Church. So I think that tells you something. And it's just not a numerical game either. He was supported, from what we're able to hear from the different cardinals we're talking, by a wide coalition of cardinals from Europe, the United States, Latin America, of course, and Africa. So this is somebody who definitely sort of came out of the blue, at least as far as the world was concerned, but who was very much well-known among the cardinals.
When we're talking about, certainly we're only in the first days, and there's much more to see yet, but when we're talking about their ideology, when we're talking about their beliefs, been said to be relatively conservative in terms of his view on how the church should progress, much in the line I've heard of Benedict or John Paul II.
Yeah. What's interesting about someone like Cardinal Bergoglio is that there's always this assumption, and always has been. In fact, I talked about this last week on NPR, that simply because he's a Latin American or comes from the third world, that somehow he's going to be changing the teachings of the church, that he'll be very different from Pope Benedict in his theological outlook. In fact, if we look at his record, he is very orthodox, at least from the Catholic standpoint. However, he is very much committed to the new evangelization, which is the big project of Pope Benedict, mm-hmm. Of trying to rekindle the fires of the Christian faith in parts of the world where they've ebbed a little bit, but also in holding on to the Catholics in the third world and the developing countries, especially in Latin America. How he sees that, though, is with a global perspective. You know, Pope Benedict, and this was how he approached things, was very much concerned and concentrating on Europe and North America. Pope Francis, I think, sees it as a global initiative. He sees the new evangelization, the proclaiming the gospel, as he likes to say, with apostolic courage, as a global initiative. And I think in a way that's one of the things that the cardinals were affirming. I was reminded just a little while ago of a wonderful Facebook post on the very night of the election. All it said was, "Well played, Holy Spirit, well played."
And we're talking with Matthew Bunsen, senior correspondent and our Sunday visitor, about the new Pope Francis elected last week. And we want to hear from you. What are your hopes for the church as it moves forward. What are your hopes that we might see some of those effects locally as well? 260-452-1185. Toll free, 800-471-9264. You can also email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And let's take evangelization focus for a minute. When we're talking about places where the church has is either shrinking or is might be in trouble, we're talking really about the United States and about Europe.
Europe especially, yeah. In the United States, the number of inactive Catholics, of course, has been growing. At any given moment, you have an inactive population, probably about 20 million Catholics. The population, though, is holding steady, but that's because of the sizable increases that we have in Latino Catholics. So that's one area you were talking about, the impact that Pope Francis may have on the Catholic Church in the United States. That's one right there, and we can talk more about that. Europe especially is problematic with the rise of secularism and what the popes refer to as materialism and relativism and other things. So there has been very much a focus on trying to rebuild sort of this Christian identity on the part of Catholics and combating what they do see as a secularizing culture.
Is that an easy thing to for any church to combat? I mean, there was a series on NPR a few weeks ago about the nuns, the increasing number of American youth who, that's N-O-N-E,
Yes. Yes.
The folks who check none of the above when they're asked about their spirituality. Is that possible to turn around in after the church has gone through so many very high profile problems the last few years?
Yeah, well, it's a perfectly valid question too. The nuns, the N-O-N-E-S's, in fact represent a wider cultural phenomenon. It, in a way, it isn't just the Catholic Church. We're seeing secularization or agnosticism and what we call fad atheism is part of a wider process that we're seeing in culture. So the question then becomes how, not necessarily how the churches make themselves more relevant, but how do they touch the hearts and minds of a whole generation that is moving away from institutional religion. And that's going to be one of the tasks, I think, that Pope Francis has. But the way he's going to come at it is exactly what he's been doing down in Buenos Aires, which is to live the faith. It's more than preaching. It's actually living your faith in a very public fashion, not aggressively, but simply living it. And his life with the poor, his care for the forgotten, his outreach to young people, his emphasis on simplicity and humility. Humility, I think, is going to be the watchword for this pontificate, and I think it's going to resonate very powerfully with young people.
We're going to take just a quick break here. When we return, we'll continue the conversation with Matthew Bunsen about the new Pope, Pope Francis, elected last week in Rome. We want to hear from you, 260-452-1185, toll-free, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, parenting a baby doomed to die soon. We talk with Emily Rapp. Her new memoir is about her son, who, at the age of 9 months, was diagnosed with Tay-Sachs disease, a genetic disorder which leads to dementia, seizures, spasticity, blindness, paralysis, and eventually death. He died last month before reaching his third birthday. Join us
this afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
To maintain a healthy discussion, we suggest a steady diet of Talk of the Nation. We'll nourish your brain with everything from cave diving to dolphin encounters, the rise of China, and the latest shenanigans on Capitol Hill. I'm Neil Conan, your daily recommended dose of news, conversation, and serendipity, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Later today, we begin a series on guns in America with a portrait of one life cut short.
I'm very proud of my brother. He was determined to make something out of his life.
Charles Foster Jr. was a college student shot and killed on New Year's Day.
The doctor came in. He like, we did all we can do. He's gone.
That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
It's about a quarter till 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you. Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel is with me as well. And during this segment of our program, we're talking with Matthew Bunsen, senior correspondent and our Sunday visitor, about Pope Francis I, the new pope elected last week in Rome. Bob Kaler.
How do you think this pope in this moment in history is going to be relevant to all of the people, even beyond Catholics?
Yeah, in fact, he's in Argentina over the years, he's established remarkably good relations even with the evangelicals and the Pentecostals. There was a service that he attended not too many years ago where there were about 30 or 40 evangelical pastors, and he knelt down and asked for their blessing and their prayer, very reminiscent of what he did on the night that he was elected. He's somebody who, when he sees someone standing in front of him, especially somebody who's poor, who's suffering, who's forgotten, he doesn't care whether they're Catholic or not. Now, in Argentina, it's 92% Catholic, so the odds are pretty good that this is a Catholic. But as he's traveled the world, too, he's brought that same type of outlook. And I say all this because it's important for him, I think, that he's establishing in humility and service, as I was saying before the last break, that the church is welcoming to everyone and is willing to dialogue with everyone. He has in Argentina very good relations, for example, with the rabbis there. And what I anticipate is that he's going to find a lot of common ground with the Protestant churches, also with culture in general, on those things where we can find common ground in helping the poor, in service, in helping families to be stronger. All of those sort of baseline things that we have in life, he's been talking about for years. So I think that's, for him, that's going to be a very powerful starting point. And then from there, I anticipate that as he travels, he's going to be a pretty prophetic voice in talking to the political leaders around the world, as he has done for a long time in Argentina, about policies, globalization, economic policies, financial policies that impact the middle class, that impact the average person. Those two, I think, will also have resonance with a lot of people of all faiths.
Papal elections put a pretty, we were talking over the break here, put a pretty unique eye on the Vatican, on this process that's hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
Is this an opportunity, this moment, an opportunity for the church to make amends with folks that who may have left or to change direction, to get more people interested in the Catholic Church?
Yeah, I think it has. We were talking that, you know, one of the questions people always have is the papacy, is the church relevant? And I made the observation that 6,000 journalists were camped out in Rome for almost a month. Mm-hmm. The networks battled each other for the best spots on the rooftops of all of the buildings surrounding the Basilica and St. Peter's Square, and they trained their cameras and microphones on every word, every gesture, every nuanced point that the Pope was making, and at the same time proclaiming that the popes aren't relevant. There is this dichotomy between oftentimes what we hear in the media and what is actually the case. And that's true, I think, with the popes, especially at a moment like this. Pope Benedict departed under what is clearly a very difficult cloud of problems in the church. And he left, and I firmly believe this, because of his declining health. With the arrival of Francis, especially the way that Francis has arrived in this first week of his pontificate, he has made it very clear that humility, service, openness, but also a flowing from that humility is a desire to seek forgiveness and reconciliation. He did that in Buenos Aires, and he's already showing that here, where he talks about the failings and the sins in the church and how we need to be reconciled.
I would think that some folks would see that not as just an interest in that, but maybe a need for the church to reconcile these things and take a look at itself, especially during this time, this very public time.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, and I think we can look over the next days. We've seen it already in the simpler approach that he's taking. Simplicity is one of his hallmarks as a person. This is an archbishop and a cardinal who took the bus, the subways, who would get on a bus and go into the most dangerous slums, not just in Argentina, but in Latin America, in one in particular, where people who were not part of that neighborhood, you just didn't go because you weren't going to get out. And he would show up and he would say Mass. He would do baptisms. He would talk to people. He would counsel them. He would help young people. All of that points, I think, to what we're seeing with him right now as Pope, that gestures are very important. Symbolism matters. And that's something I think that's going to be much more manifested over the next days. And that's going to be followed, I think, by genuine apologies. I'm looking forward to what he has to say to the church in the United States, and you want to talk about that, especially in 2015 when he comes for a planned visit for the World Council of Families that's going to be held in Philadelphia.
We're talking today about Pope Francis, the new pope elected last week in Rome, and we want to hear your questions and comments from Matthew Bunsen, 260-452-1185, toll-free, 800-471-9264. Of course, our Facebook page and our Twitter feed are also up, so we can hear from you that way. Or you can email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Let's take a slightly more local look now. Of course, the seat of the diocese here in Fort Wayne. Popes don't necessarily have, they have control over the whole church, have influence over the whole church. Will we see his fingerprints, Pope Francis's fingerprints here in Fort Wayne across Indiana?
Yeah, I do. I know tonight, I think Bishop Rhodes is saying a Mass at the cathedral that I'm looking forward to attending. The first and most obvious one, and this is going to be true for a long time to come, is that the Latino population, the growing Latino population in the United States and in this diocese, has been absolutely electrified by his election. And that, to my mind, is an important starting point for evangelization in helping them pastorally what they need. The direction that I think he's going, especially in the area of evangelization, that humility again, is going to be reflected on a local level. I think we're going to see much more interest on the part of especially young Catholics in service, in tying the love for Christ and the love for the church with the love for the poor, for the sick and the forgotten. So we're going to, I think, right out of the gate, I think that's one thing that we're going to have on a greater intensity, especially in young people, because I'm already seeing that. I would expect, too, that his gestures of asking for forgiveness, especially in the area of the sex abuse crisis, I have no doubt that this is going to be a topic for him because he ties that to wider reform and renewal in the church, I think is going to be well received here. And then there's going to be just the way that he approaches life. This is somebody who said Mass yesterday morning in one of the parishes, this little church in the Vatican. It's called St. Anne's. It's right inside the what's called the St. Anne Gate. And it's sort of the parish church for the people who work there. He said Mass, had an off-the-cuff homily, and at the end, he processed out, turned around, and greeted everyone. He parked himself right in front of the door and greeted everyone.
Like a priest at the end of the service.
Exactly. Just like a parish priest. So it's that touch that's going to come all the way down. If we think of the impact, for example, that John Paul II had on Catholics everywhere with his touches, this Pope, too, is going to have a profound impact on people who feel more welcome. who feel the sense of hospitality in the church and who are willing to say, look, the church is humble now.
We heard from Sister Elise Chris, the president of the University of St. Francis, last week on our afternoon program. And a question from Daniel here ties into to that just a bit. With the University of St. Francis in Fort Wayne, is there any special connection to the Franciscan people in Fort Wayne? Or in other words, how does this relate to Fort Wayne and the Northeast Indiana region? And Pope Francis, of course, a Jesuit, the first Jesuit to become a pope, but he chose the name Francis.
And he chose it for a very specific reason, in honor of Francis of Assisi. You know, there's a lot of questions. Is it Francis Xavier? Is it Francis Borgia? You know, great Jesuits. No, he was very clear that he wanted Francis of Assisi. And that goes to his love of the poor and also his dedication to reform. So obviously there is a great Franciscan tradition in this area, so that's something worth celebrating. Tomorrow, if anyone's watching his massive installation in St. Peter's, it's my understanding that he has asked for all of the servers to be members of the Franciscan order. So that tells us something, too, of the direction he's headed. It's been noted that he is a Jesuit who took the name Francis, who's wearing the robes of a Dominican, because that's where the cassock for the popes actually originated.
Just very, very briefly here, for folks who may not be Catholic or you know, may not be familiar with Jesuits, Franciscans, etc., what's the difference?
Well, the religious orders in the church all have specific charisms. They have specific functions in the church. The Jesuits, who were founded in the 16th century around the time of the Catholic Reform by St. Ignatius Loyola, took as their objective to serve the church, especially in teaching, in evangelization, in service to the poor. The Franciscans, who were started by St. Francis of Assisi in the early 13th century, were what were called mendicants. Basically, they're people who lived like the Benedictines or the very intense spiritual life, but they lived it in service in the world. And they have a very close tie to the poor, to the forgotten, again, to that humble service. And then you have the Dominicans, who were founded around the same time as the Franciscans by St. Dominic de Guzman. Their big charism is study of theology. They always had the nickname of the watchdogs of orthodoxy. They produced some of the greatest minds in the church, of course, such as St. Thomas Aquinas.
Just about 30 seconds here, very briefly, what are you most looking forward to, keeping an eye on in the days to come?
Yeah, listening to what he has to say, especially in the area of evangelization, that new evangelization, but also the direction he wants the church to go globally.
We have run out of time, unfortunately, for this edition of Midday Matters. Thanks so much, Matthew Bunsen, senior correspondent at Our Sunday Visitor. We appreciate you being with us today.
Great pleasure. Anytime that I can help.
Thanks also to Al Mull and Charisse Fortreat and Bob Kaler. Thanks very much for being with us as well.
Thank you.
I'm Sean Beter. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, service of Manchester University. Fresh air with your local host Katie Anderson is coming up next. We hope you'll stay with us. Have a great day.